Mini episode 1940 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1940. With you here today, two of your favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Rick Morris and Ben Chu. Ben, primarily on the show in his role as FDH Hoops analyst, but has been on sometimes to talk as part of our ongoing mini-series covering the streaming industry, and we may have some more on that in the near future, but also increasingly on covering different prestige TV shows that he and I both have an interest in, and that would include The Bear, and just wrapped up season 5 in very interesting fashion here on FX and Hulu. And I found it to be, I would say, a very satisfying wrap up to the series, and something where I felt like, from my perspective, they stuck the landing. How did you see it, Ben?
I thought it was really well done. I thought the finale was more storyline tie up more than anything, but it still did a very good job. And I feel like, too, it's always tough for a show like The Bear to wrap up the way everyone wants it to. And then at the end of the day, it's also, there's just so many in plot lines for this season, and trying to tie it all together does make a lot of sense. But again, it's always interesting with comedy drama series. In comparison to just pure comedy or pure drama, there's like a formulaic end. With a comedy drama or a dramedy, there really isn't, and it was really interesting to see how The Bear decided to do that for the finale episode.
Yes, and this is something that I've talked about throughout the course of the show, and the whole thing of the classification of the show, a lot of times by critics, I have found to be very simple-minded as far as like, half hour equals comedy. Like, no, not at all, I would say. Even dramedy, I think I might push back on that a bit, because it's like, just the fact that, like, well, there's the facts, they're comic relief. Every drama out there has at least some notion of comic relief. I don't know that I've ever watched a drama that didn't have at least one character that was meant to lighten things up. So that does not in and of itself make something a comedy. This has been very, very serious subject matter going back to the first season, because it's the, what you're dealing with is a bunch of different people who've come together at this restaurant, and each of them is battling all of these toxic things that they've dealt with in their own life and the baggage that they have had to deal with that they're bringing to this position here. And that even as they grow professionally, exponentially, everybody except Carmi, and I would say because Carmi entered the series already at that level, I'm not sure there was any place higher for him to go as a chef, and he's maintained at that level. And then maybe some of the other guest ones that came in, like Luca and some of them, like they were already elite. But like everybody that was at The Bear when it was the beef, Tina and all of them stepping up and becoming elite at what they do. And that somewhat helps them to grow as people. That's definitely a part of it. But you're watching a chronology of the growth of all of these people, as well as the building of this institution as a spot of fine dining. And that in and of itself doesn't lend itself to an awful lot of humor. There are definitely funny moments here and there, but it's a very, very serious show. And just the way that even if you go back to even season one, and I've talked about this before, just the cinematography of it, of like when Carmi would be going through these panic attacks and you'd be getting these flashes, like, you know, looking at like whether the food or this or that or whatever, as the panic is playing out in his head. Just expertly done in terms of telling this very, very serious story about these people pushing through the toxicities and traumas in their own life to get to this point of professional excellence, and in a lot of cases, most cases, by the time it's done, personal fulfillment.
Right, and this season is probably one of the more linear of the Bears seasons. Usually in seasons past, I believe season 2 and 3 were more indicative of having a bounce around plot line, to where this one was more about a singular, the final opening of the Bear, and then the potential for it to get Michelin stars and the potential for where a lot of the characters would end up at the end of the day. And I felt like that's what made this season so interesting, because it had gone away from not necessarily the interpersonal drama, because there's a whole lot of interpersonal drama in this season, but it felt more like it was more about Carmi's own insecurities along with him trying to build a restaurant. While this was more focused on, we have, this is potentially our last shot to keep this restaurant alive, et cetera, et cetera. And how each character has shown growth during the season and how you deal with, especially within the food industry, especially with, you know, with places like restaurants, how a general service is run and how the issues that you run into on a daily basis. And now in this season, obviously a lot of it is very, you know, comedic relief and just, you know, or just drama relief. It feels a lot more like, this is more indicative of how a restaurant dealing with these situations and how characters or how chefs and sous chefs would react and front of the house staff would react to stuff like this.
Yes, it does. And the one thing, if I'm going to be critical here, and you and I have talked about this a little bit off air, is the subplot, and they clearly knew where they were going with this as far back as the end of last season, the whole thing of Carmi kind of seemingly out of nowhere quitting and saying that he doesn't want to be part of the thing going forward. I would argue and say that given the level of obstacles that they were facing in getting everything to move forward here, I don't think they needed to add anything to it. I think it's not like a fully invested Carmi being a part of trying to help save the place would have been like, oh, you're giving away the ending. No, not necessarily, because that would be, again, even with Carmi's best efforts and him really having his heart in it, there was still the potential for the thing to splinter apart anyways, because there was so much going against it. They'd burned through all the runway with Jimmy Cicero's money, et cetera. So you had... That part of it, I think, felt kind of pasted on. And you come to find out here in the end of that what he's interviewing for is to be, I guess it would be an intern at an architectural firm with, I suppose from there, I suppose an eye towards going back to school and maybe trying to become an architect at that stage of life. But as opposed to, and I saw a lot of comments on Reddit that I found to be accurate of like, you mean to tell me that the guy couldn't just go teach at a culinary school? Because like... There's no way that he finds the job repulsive. You know, it's like, it's not like, oh, I have to get away from food altogether. Because he was comfortable being a sidekick to Sydney there as it was going through. But it appeared to be the discovery, I think, of like, it doesn't have to be all on me. And I think in the end, and people gone back and forth about, was that the equivalent of Jim Halpert, where do you see yourself in 10 years? As he in the interview was waxing poetic about all the things of the kitchen here. Does that lead you to believe that he will stick around in the kitchen in a support role that he can be comfortable with? I sort of lean towards that, because they seem to be setting up the happy ending here. And as I said previously here, and as the segment is labeled, it is a spoilered review. So if I just ruined it for you, it's not like you didn't have the opportunity to read otherwise. But yeah, so basically the happy ending here, and a happy ending that I see Carmi as being a part of in the ongoing thing here. It is interesting that based on what the new character Computer had unearthed previously, like, they don't have a million years to spend in that facility, in that place, because that building is just shot with all the different issues that are happening here. So it's going to have to move out of the neighborhood. It's going to have to move someplace else. But the combination of how well it's doing and the capacity of the beef restaurant with the ghost kitchen in the suburbs to subsidize it, everything happening like that, it leads you to believe that, yes, you are going to have this going forward. And now getting not just one, but two Michelin stars, that you're making this place a legitimate magnet to where a lot of diners, even more than the ones that you've been getting thus far, are going to be lined up to get in there. So it appears to be the happy ending just about all the way around. I mean, they didn't like spoil it for us in a sense of like flashback 5 years from now of like where everybody's just raining money and everything like that. But it's easy to envision in your head that it is going to be pretty successful down the line.
Right. And I think one of the side plots here for Carmi is that he did achieve success. He was able to open a Michelin star restaurant on someone, which is one of the goals he had earlier on. Mm-hmm. In the series. And it just feels like, too, that, again, that was a subplot that I felt like they kind of, I agree with you, Rick, they forced it a little bit. There's nothing wrong with how they did it. I don't think, I'm not going to go to my grave and say, look, that was the reason why it wasn't as interesting. I just think more that it's the whole narrative that they also wanted to set up that scene in particular at the architectural firm about Carmi discussing how much that meant to him and all that. So it, again, I understand sometimes a show like this, you want to pull on the heartstrings just a little bit, but I also feel like too, it's like it, they could have ended it a myriad of different ways. And I don't think it really would have impacted anyone's joy for the series, because again, it's a very unique show. Mm-hmm. And we see stuff like in certain dramas and certain comedies get criticized more because they're stuck in their own sort of individualized world in comparison to this one.
Yes, and that is definitely something this show is not guilty of. It was interesting. So the first part of the season, the first, most of it, I would say, most of the season being set in one day. So borrowing the whole format of the pit of where you are just going through a day in the life. And it was a very pivotal day as they're going through everything. That made it interesting. Now, the whole thing with, like, the flood outside and, you know, just the weather emergency and whatever, like, I almost felt like they might have overdone it a little bit there. And then, like, you know, some of, like, the leaks that they had in the kitchen, like, for as much as they in the past have kind of been, like, the kitchen has to be immaculate to be able to turn out food on this level, the notion that they're just soldiering through this slog of, like, flooded water and that kind of crap to turn out elite-level food, you know, at the risk of making me comic book guy here on spotting a contradiction, I was kind of like, well, which is it? Is it the kitchen has to be immaculate for these things to happen? Or can you, under these conditions, still turn out a dining experience that people are going to appreciate just as much? So that to me might have been a little bit excessive as far as how they played that. But I mean, I especially compared to what I had to say about Carmi's subplot, I probably am nitpicking a bit on that one.
I don't really think you are too much. It's just, I think, and we talk about burnout, especially within the restaurant industry, burnout with bartenders, burnout with wait staff, burnout with ownership. It's one of the very integral parts of our modernized society that we have. To go out and have a meal is a very distinct thing. And then again, there's also instances where you're a regular at a restaurant or in the same scenario that you will go to a city for a restaurant or for an experience. And I think one of the big things that The Bear really did touch on was the level of stress it takes to deal with the restaurant situations. And also on top of that, you also have to deal with different characters and how you learn as an individual in terms of improving menu items and trying different things and having to deal with customers and having to deal with shortages and all these other little machinations that the restaurant industry has to deal with that not a lot of other jobs have to deal with, to be brutally honest. Yeah. So it was really interesting to see they decided to do that 24-hour note and how successful it was with it. And again, in a way too, I wouldn't have minded that in prior seasons as well, because I felt like sometimes Rick bopping around in prior seasons of The Bear was interesting, but it didn't do a lot for the storyline at periods of time. And I feel like at least for season 5, a more cohesive storyline really did help the season.
Yes, and it is one of these things where it's very, very educational, I think, to those of us that are, you know, more unfamiliar with, you know, that level of high dining, because I'm like a number of people, I suppose, where, like, in terms of the more expensive places that I've ever been, they've probably sort of disproportionately been some form of steakhouse, where it's a thing where, like, look, I'm not taking away from the difficulty level there, but if you have very, very high grade meat and you even marginally know what you're doing, you can turn out delicious steaks and everything like that. So it's like, it had never really occurred to me as far as like places like this, the level of difficulty in there. But, you know, that the whole thing, the message that it for the previous seasons, like every second counts and whatever, that's where the stress level comes from. Because it's like, if you're charging these people this amount of stuff and you don't have the cheat code of this is a very expensive steak that we're making for you, you know, you're having, I had compared it, I think, previously to like, and again, I'd never really put two and two together on this, but as far as how you evoke the flavors and everything like that, these people are essentially like trained chemists. You know, like this combination of this stuff will give you this kind of elite flavor. I never really thought of it that way, but there's not a lot of difference between what they're doing and high level chemistry. So all of the things that go with that, the things that somebody like me would kind of never think of before watching a show like this, that's where the stress level comes from. You have no margin for error. If you're going to get Michelin stars or even provide the expected level of service to people paying this amount of money to come to your restaurant, if it is not just impeccable in every way. And that's where the show was very educational to folks like myself about what goes into this, and that's where the stress level comes from, because the standard is perfection. And every one of us knows in any job that we've ever had, when the standard is perfection, just how stressful that is.
Right. And I think also one of the underlying themes of the Bear that we've seen through all these seasons is that it's dealing with personality, but it's also dealing with the inner self. And that's part of the restaurant industry. You have, and we also saw Joel McHale's character essentially being Carmi's sort of anti-hero narrative and having to deal with what he had to go through in that timeline. And again, too, the one thing that I did think makes the Bear unique and makes it unique for the timeline that it was produced in was food culture in the last 15, 20 years has grown exponentially. Like in the 90s and early 2000s, you started to see it on the coastal areas. You started to see it in some of the cities. But now with the proliferation of social media, with streaming services, food culture is as popular as ever. And, you know, my big thing and my big takeaway, not necessarily from the series, is that this was more an accurate reflection, because most of the stuff leading up to that, Rick, it was a lot of food documentaries and reality TV shows, mm-hmm. of having chefs compete against each other to create dishes and create things. But this was more indicative of a restaurant scenario, very similar to like when Gordon Ramsay brought Hell's Kitchen to Fox. Like, right. Even though that was more of a chaotic narrative,
mm-hmm.
it's still very, and again, I would not compare what goes on in Hell's Kitchen to any other Michelin star restaurant, but that, like you said, that level of pressure is there. And for a lot of individuals, the one thing that we don't get from reality TV sometimes is it's very emotional and very upfront. But
yep.
The Bear was a different narrative where you got to learn about these characters and about the issues that they have to deal with. And I think too, considering how successful The Bear was and then other stuff like Boiling Point and some of these, and the very briefly existed Kitchen Confidential based off of Anthony Bourdain's book on Fox. I don't think we're necessarily going to see more food drama shows, but we're going to see a lot of food related content that's more about the chefs and how they deal with their regular everyday lives. Because everything up to this point was very packaged and very specific.
I think you're right about that. And that's the thing where, again, and so when I speak of all of these revelations as I've watched this, that just underscores all the more what an outsider I am to this. None of these food shows have ever been my jam. I've not watched a minute of any of them. I know of Gordon Ramsay, what I see from the commercials that I've watched involuntarily while football or something else is on. That's kind of the limit of it. Like, it's like, okay, it's stressful being in that kitchen. And you got a guy like Gordon Ramsay yelling at you. That's about the extent of what I know. What this show does is it deconstructs why. And that if you're in an elite level place and you're carrying those crushing levels of expectation, you know, that you have to go out there and you have to execute this. I'll use the word again, chemistry at such a high level you know, like when you pair this together with this, you know, and you see so many scenes when they're in a kitchen, like try this, like, oh, that's sort of the best things I've ever had. Like just the ability to conjure these things up. Sometimes it's off of a recipe. And I think Carmi had a pretty long list of recipes. I think that was kind of covered, which is another reason that the guy could have gone into, you know, being a culinary teacher if he wanted to. But a lot of it's just the experimentation of what if you try this with this. And there was a little bit of that in real time on that long day that they had there of like, okay, we're going to take and we're going to, they were incorporating, I think, some of the Chicago style beef, were they not, into some of the things? That's what I thought. And they were doing some flatbread stuff too. It's like some quasi pizza. So yeah, they were sort of doing some experimentation in real time. And that's where you get to see on this. And it shows you the intelligence level of these characters at this stage of the game that they can intuit that like, oh, this would be really good if I put this together with this. And that's something that like, you know, the likes of the rest of us as we're heating up our Chef Boyardee or whatever are never going to know how to do that.
Well, and I think, too, this is the growth we've seen in food culture, especially within YouTube, especially within Instagram. We're seeing more people being intrigued with fine dining and travel restaurants. Like we've seen, there was a period of timeline where the food culture, and we discussed this before, it was very limited. It was like, it was stuff you saw on the Food Network. It was Emerald. It was, you know, a lot of these up-and-coming TV shows like Guy de Laurentiis. But now it feels more like a lot of people want more of a base-level experience or that experience of learning how a Michelin star restaurant is run. And we saw how popular Chef's Table became on Netflix. It's probably the precursor to The Bear more than anything else, where you saw viewers getting more intrigued with a certain chef's story or how they view food, which is very similar in the series, how Carmi views food and Sydney views food and how they went from a very simple restaurant to building a Michelin star restaurant. Mm-hmm. Even though that's not necessarily as linear as the series was, but that's essentially what it became at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that's really interesting also in terms of what they did is going through and not just with the main characters, but even with some of the peripheral characters, taking some, I won't necessarily say stereotypes, but let's just say assumptions and turning them on their heads. Because if you looked at like season one of this, Uncle Jimmy, it was a thing where, again, you know, nice enough guy, generally speaking, but you were getting some real sort of loan shark vibes off of him. Like, you owe me the money, kid, and everything. And you come to see over a period of time what a nuanced character he is. And then you get into this season and the regrets that he's had about some of the other financial decisions he's made that haven't worked out so well. And that, you know, he might be a little, he probably is shady in the sense of, again, he's in Chicago, which is a notoriously corrupt town. So it's, but the corruption is probably more so as far as maybe potentially bribing government officials or whatever, as opposed to being a mob guy. But I think season one was leading you to believe he's a mob guy. So it kind of turns that assumption on its head a little bit. And I found Pete to be another one as well here too, which is hilarious because if you see the, you know, Progressive commercials, I think it's more or less that actor sort of playing the same guy. But, you know, it's something where for the way that the rest of the family has kind of seen him, that like he really kind of came off as being a simp early on because he's a nice guy. But then over a period of time, like, no, he just legitimately is a good guy. He's a smart guy. He earns enough money to allow Sugar to go and kind of pursue this, you know, here and not really have any money coming into their household from it, even as they have another mouth to feed. He's unconditionally supportive of everybody there. He's a fan of the efforts that they have here. So making him into a guy where it's like he's not a simp, but he's a full-fledged, you know, three-dimensional character, even though he's a good guy, that's another way where they really kind of turn it on their head. The facts, I don't know so much. The facts, you know, I think if I try to give you any kind of extrapolation as to how they're three-dimensional characters, I'd probably be going way too far. But not everybody has to be. But like, look, a lot of shows don't even take the effort to flesh out a Jimmy or a Pete, and this show did. So yeah, it was so well done across the board.
Yeah, and I think too, it's one of the more chaotic series that we've seen in recent memory, and mm-hmm. just in terms of from season to season to season. But it also, had very poignant moments, had very specific storylines, had very specific, you know, thoughts about one's own, I don't want to say mortality, that seems like the wrong word, but one's own sort of drive, one's sort of success, and how do you place success in your life through failure. And we saw that through, obviously, we saw it through Carmi's character, but we also saw it through Richie as well. So it feels like this was a series that gave a lot to of characters that had a lot of three-dimensional looks at them, which for a show normally like a dramedy, sometimes you don't get that. Sometimes you get a lot of one-note characters. But this, they did a really good job of overall trying to build this world, build this universe, and make it as real as they possibly could, but still have that sort of TV edge to it where you want to be watching the next episode.
Yes, they did an excellent job of that. And one of these things where, again, if you're going to go for, and there were a lot of people that were speculating that perhaps it might not be the happy ending for the series because it seemed to be foreshadowing so much that it was going to go the other way, that the obstacles would be insurmountable. They were laying it on so thick with that. That if you're going to have the happy ending of where apparently this restaurant continues to endure and then looking into the future, probably even thrive in as much as, like I said before, the combination of now it has the two Michelin stars and can be subsidized by the whole ghost kitchen in the suburbs thing for the beef, which the beef always being, you know, a strong money maker as far as the popularity of what it had to offer with those great sandwiches. So making that whole happy ending feel earned was very, I mean, that's not always a thing that's easy to do because sometimes it can feel forced and particularly if great obstacles are being overcome. But even to some of the micro level happy endings, like for Richie showing that something does materialize with Jess, that was a thing where, you know, there were any number of different points along the way where, you know, potentially he could have asked her out or this or that or whatever. And season one, Richie probably would have done that because he probably would have had this fatalistic, you know, sense it's not going to work anyway, so shoot your shot. But having it unfold the way that it did and not having him, you know, I think sort of as he was going through the sort of journey of like self-worth as a guy who had been divorced, had a daughter that he didn't wished he got to see more often and everything like that, to, you know, the discovery of how great he could be at helping to manage a place like that. I think it was sort of like as the self-worth and the confidence grew in him, that was a thing that basically attracted Jess to him. And that was where, again, it was there was ways to do that particular ending that wouldn't have felt earned, but they chose one that I think very much did.
Yeah, and I feel like, too, is that as a lasting moment, I think the major focus was obviously going to be always be on Carmi and Richie. We knew this. And Carmi having the ability to go outside his world to start a new life is a big thing. And the big thing for Richie was gaining that level of confidence that he learned priorly. And now he's embarking on his next journey as well. And the real question, too, is obviously the bear, we've seen TV series wreck or just streaming series go on for too long. And I feel like they kind of, could this have gone to a season six? I think it could have. But I almost feel like it's a good idea to wrap it up now and then potentially down the line have a movie, potentially down the line have a spinoff, that there's an opportunity to do something a little bit different at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I feel both ways about that. I feel like it could have gone on longer, but I feel like the season that was the least favorite of mine, season three, was the one where it was the season after when you saw the growth, particularly in all of the supporting characters, as they're going through their journeys of learning how great they can be leading up to the opening of the bear. And It felt off to me in a way where it was such a regression on the part, especially of Carmi. And it reminded me a little bit of, as much as I loved Mad Men, and maybe it's one of the things that actually made Mad Men a little bit more realistic, is that somebody, a complex character like Don Draper, there will be steps forward and steps back. But that was something that frustrated me, Like, you would see him make a bunch of progress in a previous season, and then the next season completely backslide into whether it be heavy drinking or cheating on his wife or whatever. And it would just kind of be like, I don't know, are you trying to stretch this out however many seasons? Like, I loved it for what it was, but it was frustrating, the fact that there would be this up and back. And so I look at season three with Carmi, and I just wonder, like, if they had tried to push it out further, would we have seen some potential, what I would call artificial regression? Like, we have to have this character regress just to stretch it out longer. Based on what happened on season three, I think that's very likely the case. So I think they made the right decision wrapping it up in five. As much as guys like me or you would be like, give me more. Like, we would want more, but we would not want it to be like, oh, I remember when this show used to be really great. We would not want it to be like that.
Right, and we also exist now in a timeline too, Rick, where with so many options now, there's always a way to continue this on if they wanted to revisit it at some point. It's not necessarily that they have to do another season. You can always do a spinoff. You can always do a short-form movie. You can even do a long-form movie if you really want to do it too. So, again, I think the big issues that we've always run into, at least in recent memory, with some of these great TV shows that they go on for too long. And I feel like The Bear did a very good job of kind of wrapping it up in season five.
If you were to do any kind of a spinoff, you'd have to peel off the characters from the restaurant, because then it would just be like, how come they're never showing such and such and such and such when they're in the same building? But like, part of me is thinking that, like, you know, somebody has got an idea in their heads, probably among the creative team, of like, what if we move the facts away from there? And what if we just did a wacky sitcom with the Fack family? Like, that feels like something. That feels like there's a non-zero chance that could happen.
Yeah. Well, my thing too is, like, there, since a lot of these characters are big and well founded, I mean, we could totally see a scenario where you get an Ibrahim Cheese series, essentially, about them creating the ghost kitchen and the issues that they have to do with the beef. But again, there's just so many ways that a TV series could go. But again, to go back to the prior point, like, I think our biggest gripes with certain TV series is that they go on for too long, or they just, the ending is just so out there that's just kind of meh.
Yeah.
And I feel like, again, I did not feel like the finale of season five of The Bear was the greatest thing I've ever seen, but I understand what they needed to do and why they needed to get to that point.
Exactly. And that's where, and I think my criticism would be, when I look at a show like Mad Men, that was a thing where it would be, and again, Don Draper being the kind of exceedingly troubled, and this would be an understatement to say, exceedingly troubled kind of person that he was. Maybe in a way it made it more realistic that there was the steps forward and steps backward. But there were seasons where, like, the firm would be going through certain issues, and it was like, much like with Carmi's subplot with, you know, the architectural firm, you didn't really need that. Like, the main obstacle would have sufficed. And it feels like you inject other things in just to stretch out the series. So that's a thing where, again, I was more of a critic of that with Mad Men. I'm somewhat of a critic of this with this show for season three, because I felt like some of the whole angst with Carmi was sort of artificial, perhaps, and that he regressed as a character in ways that I wasn't quite sure that I believed. So it's a thing where I think for series, if they're going about this, I guess the lesson that I've learned in watching different shows is you have to be able to recognize, I think, as a writer, when the macro level obstacle for a season suffices, and that it's not necessary for characters to regress in any way to make it a little bit more kind of dramatic. I think a lot of times it's just putting faith in, you know, knowing that the large obstacle itself certainly sufficed. The large obstacle in season five of making this thing viable didn't need any other embellishment from any other characters. It was a big enough deal to begin with. It was the sword hanging over everybody's neck, and you really didn't need anything else to kind of add to it. So that's just, like I said, it's not a huge criticism on my part, but it is something I noticed as I was watching it, is that the interjection of some of these extra kind of elements wasn't necessarily anything that added to it in my estimation.
Right, and I feel like that's some of the same criticisms I saw online, and it's a little critique-y of mine too at the end of the season too, where, it, again, I'm not debating how they did the finale. It just feels more like this became wrap-up hour, essentially. And we've seen certain TV shows do that very successfully and some do it. I say The Bear was right in the middle. And I feel too, they did a really good job of pacing the season in comparison to years past where we've seen seasons that was not paced well at all. So it's going to, it was, I would say overall for a season five of a series that was universally blew up by most people who watched it, it was just one of those shows that was very unique for the time period. And it feels like is going to be something that we call back to in the, at least in recent memory of the 2020s, as one of the best shows on streaming service or TV.
Totally agree. And there was a critique that I saw on Reddit that I did somewhat agree with. The whole thing of that, like, and it's one of those things where, again, like when shows make you picture something in your head, I know that there's a real challenge to have something lay out on screen exactly, you know, or any way differently than the way that you would think that it would be. But the triumphant scene where everybody learns that they got the two stars, I have to say, I do kind of subscribe to that criticism. And it's like, even if it wouldn't look any different than what we're imagining, it's not canon if we're imagining it. You know what I mean? Right. I'd like to see it on screen. I think that was a valid criticism.
Right. And I think another scenario, too, that they could have also discussed, too, is at the tail end of with Richie Gang on the plane with Jess and with Carmi, too, is that they could have interspersed that a little bit. They could have changed that up a little bit. It, again, the Carmi subplot, I feel like they had to put it in there just for the sake of it, but they could have gone a bunch of different ways with that. That we, you know, they didn't have to go that route, but they decided that. And again, I'm not necessarily sure was that as successful, but I understand why they needed to do it because he needed, I guess, that level of space from his own life at that time.
Yeah, I get that. And so some of the character choices that they were making informed things like that. And yeah, it was really interesting to see how it played out, the different character choices that were made. And it was a thing where it was, in terms of the story that they were telling, the story that they were telling about the growth of the characters didn't necessarily push you to believe that the restaurant itself was going to make it, because that was a separate story. But as far as the characters being happy with themselves and their own lives, regardless of what happened with the restaurant, that part of it you kind of needed in the end, because that's the story that they were telling, and they did stay true to it, that everybody with the growth that they had made, it made them a lot happier in their own lives.
Right, and I think it's, again, it's just a tough scenario, no matter what, if I'm being totally honest. It's just one of those things where it's always tough to wrap up a series, and it feels like, to me, The Bear did its best to do it. And I feel like at some points it was very successful, but at some points also, too, it's just really hard when you have a critically acclaimed series to have an ending that makes everyone happy.
Yes. And, I mean, based on the feedback that I've seen, I think people basically seemed happy with it. I mean, there's nothing of the outrage of what you... Now, again, the outrage in a lot of different cases for different shows was situational, as far as, like, well, with The Sopranos, most people didn't like it just going to black all of a sudden, or, you know, this or that or whatever. There were choices that were made in a great many instances where it would even go beyond, well, it's not a happy ending, but to where it's an ending that, I mean, nobody ever creates anything to alienate their audience, but where you're taking an active chance that you're going to alienate your audience, and it happens sometimes. And that generally, I think, goes hand in hand with an ending that is not a happy ending. So if this one weren't, there probably would be more negative feedback, but I haven't really seen a lot of negative feedback aside from, like I said, around the margins of like, they should have showed the reaction of everybody to getting the stars or this or that or whatever. But like, I mean, I'm guessing it's the same for you, but I haven't seen anything out there of like, they screwed us on the ending of this thing.
No, I didn't see anything similarly on that. No. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of machinations they could have done differently, but it feels like that was going to be the culmination at some point, too.
It does. And, yeah, it was a strong ending to a strong series. And, like I said, a very, very daring series and concept and whatever. Like I said, going back to when I was talking about previously, as far as the cinematography of the way that they would show things to try to take you inside people's heads, generally speaking, as they were having panic attacks or, you know, any kind of negative flashbacks or anything of that nature. Just the level of toxicity that a lot of, you know, just about everybody was really kind of bringing to this here. And a lot of it coming from, because the whole thing of, you know, the bear, that of course stemming from the Bearzotto family, and that, you know, for as much as people refer to cousin and everything like that, a lot of times it's a matter of, well, not a blood relative, but somebody that we claim as a relative, being some part of this larger Bearzotto family. A lot of it coming from, quite frankly, the dysfunction of the always unshown, unseen, and rarely mentioned patriarch of the family, and then also Donna, who was a hot mess pretty much all the way through. Although, again, seasons 4 and 5 seemed like she was cleaning up her act an awful lot, such that Sugar, it was, some of it was a matter of desperation asking her to babysit her daughter, but in the end, trusting her enough to do it and trusting her enough to bring her to the kitchen as they were getting ready for that big night there. So just the journey that was taken with the characters all the way around as a character study, it is one of the more fascinating series I think that I've ever seen as far as the journeys that they took all of them on. And it's basically a thing where, to the general public, I think it's more so subtext. I mean, the story that they're telling writ large is the story of the building of this institution and taking what had been a hole-in-the-wall place, albeit with very popular and tasty sandwiches, but making it into a fine dining kind of a thing. That was basically the log line of the whole thing, as opposed to the character study of it. That, to me, is what distinguished it probably more so than anybody else was watching the personal journeys that they went on.
Right, and I think ultimately at the end of the day, while the show was about individuals' own personal stress levels and narratives, it's really about food and the restaurant industry. And we saw how it impacts people's lives and the growth that we saw from characters and some of the negatives that we saw from some of the characters.
And that's it. That's it exactly. And that in a way, that because when you look at what is, you know, at least implied about the education level of a lot of these characters, I mean, like Tina being a relatively working class woman. Now, she'd had an office job previously, so you could be sort of on the fence as to whether she was college educated or not. But most of the rest of them, working class, hadn't been to college. Certainly somebody like Richie would say that that's not the case. But when you talk about the food industry here, it's a matter of these people coming, you know, head on into an industry where you don't need a whole lot in the way of book learning, but there is specialized learning nonetheless. Like if you learn, again, like I said before, some of the chemistry with food, somebody like Tina was bright enough to grasp that and get to be very strong at it. Richie got to be at a PhD level with the customer service and understanding how to take care of that and make a happy experience for people as they're dining out. That when you talk about the food industry part there, Ben, what I'm hearing is how accessible it was for people like this, that it was something that they could come into. And yes, as I said before, the standard being perfection, that is incredibly stressful. It's not easy psychologically, but for the intelligence level of all of the characters, becoming great at it was accessible as far as just applying themselves to it. And that's what made it, that's one of the many things that made it fascinating to me.
Right, and I feel like it's what makes this series unique at that same level is that in a lot of these workplace shows, it's very office-oriented, it's very, you know, the interpersonal drama, but when you're in a restaurant, you're also serving customers at the end of the day. There, a lot of these, it's one of the very few industries we have in America, maybe outside of athletes, sports, and theater and entertainment, where you're playing to your audience on some level. And yep, in comparison to those other examples I use in sports and entertainment, the food industry is a very distinct industry. You have to provide customer service in comparison to other fields. So it feels that the Bear did a really good job of analyzing how that works and then how kitchens work. And again, too, it's like they kept it grounded in reality for most of it. Because there, I could totally see a scenario where they wanted to potentially go outside the box. And they did a very good job of not pushing anything to unbelievability during the course of the show.
Right. They did that, absolutely. And I feel like everything with the budgeting that Jimmy was putting them on with the computer. I feel like that was something that was very, very, you know, realistic as well. The clock that was going there through season four, and then the introduction of Cheese in season five, as far as this goes, you know, the limitations that the money people are putting on you for what is inherently a very expensive enterprise, a matter of, like, you know, having to go to the farmer's market every day and get some of the best of this and the best of that and the other different places that they were going, that, yeah, it was very, very realistic. I felt like it's, when you say something like that, Ben, that's what I think of, is that, like, you know, there would be ways to make the financial end of this thing less realistic. And they never flinched from showing you the pressure that it brought in that way, and of stretching your money in those ways. And that some of the choices that Carmi was making in previous seasons of constantly changing the menu and everything like that, how that burned through a whole lot more of the money, to where, you know, it really put them in a lot of peril there towards the end, because he wasn't going in a consistent, firm direction with things.
Right, and I think that played to what we see in the restaurant industry these days, is that you usually have a financial backer, or you have a loan, or you have a bank that you have to kowtow to. And it is discussed in terms of the businesses you can start, the restaurant industry is one of the toughest. Mm-hmm. And having to make sure that that level of consistency for your food keeps on going. And there's a reason why it has such a high failure rate, and why we have all these reality TV shows about fixing restaurants, because of that narrative. So it was good that the Bear didn't shy away from that, because they could have done the whole pie in the sky, like Cicero, essentially, his character was Mr. Moneybags. It didn't matter what amount of money, like, he would do it to help Carmi's dream, et cetera. But no, in most cases in the restaurant industry and in the food industry in general, that's usually not the case.
Right.
And again, like, we've seen it before. Like, I think I remember there was some statistic before the, like, post-pandemic, like, I believe it was like 25% of restaurants in the United States closed down because of the pandemic, because of just how few people were going out and getting food from restaurants. And it's a real thing. And there are places that you can even see, like, you're making revenue generation, doing really, really well, and then they still close down anyway because you can't afford rent. You can't afford, you know, to keep your overhead costs within that range. Again, the margins are very thin. It's probably one of the very few businesses outside of maybe sports where if you aren't taking in enough revenue, you're really in danger of having to do something drastic.
That's right. Yeah, because the margins can be so thin on this, the profit margins that you're operating at. And yeah, just such a great job of illustrating that and bringing it home. And I will say also, too, that for any of the concern that was out there, and I never put any stock in this whatsoever, but the people who looked at, because, again, so between seasons four and five, you did have the standalone episode, Gary, which we had talked about previously, and the whole thing of, like, Richie's car accident at the end. Oh, are they writing off Richie? Like, it would have been a little bit more plausible if he actually got T-boned on his side. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, had that been the case, then it would have been like, oh, what are they looking to do here? I still would have been doubtful that they were going to be killing him off because he was so key to the resolution of the show and the story that they were telling, essentially. So having Richie be basically martyred along the way didn't fit with the story that they were telling. So it was something where, again, you know, Gary managed to fit into what they were doing. They show you that car crash scene early in the season five premiere, and that it ends up being a thing where, not that it's a minor issue, but where Richie's having to tell people through the course of the day that he actually was in a car accident because he wasn't in the hospital or anything like that. So that ended up being a lot closer to what I figured was going to be the case. I didn't figure that this was going to be anything of where it's going to impact on the final plot of the show and the way that it goes.
And and also that episode too, Rick, was very focused on trying to build backstory for anything. So.
It was. It's interesting that I wouldn't say that I found this jarring, but and it's one of those things where, again, sometimes things are done. Sometimes there's exposition for the benefit of the viewing audience. So this was something that told us a lot more about everything with Mikey and what Mikey was like. And the upside, and this episode certainly focused on the downside of dealing with him and everything that he was going through. I thought it was going to maybe serve more of a purpose as far as incorporating something into season five. Maybe Richie might actually reference that thing. I think he made an offhand reference to Carmi about a trip that I took with your brother one time. And like, we were meant to know that that's what that was. But I was wondering if anything that unfolded there was going to come up at all subsequently, and it didn't. So that appears to be one of these ones where, you know, almost like an unreleased extra of where we're meant to see something, like here's something to kind of really take you inside the head of Mikey as he was going through his downward spiral. In retrospect, that was 100% of what ended up being, you know, mined from that.
Yeah, and I felt like at the end of the day, that was its own standalone sort of backstory. Yeah. That, again, I'm not necessarily sure we needed that per se, but it was always a good thing to have. Just for any sort of completist, for any sort of drama, comedy series. Like, you just, any backstory is usually good for the growth of the characters at the end of the day.
I would agree. And if we're going to, if there's going to be any unreleased things, I know that, you know, with the dusk of the age, as it were, of things being released on DVD, getting these kind of extras is more or less a thing of the past. But if there were to be any unreleased extras that would be released, I'd like to see a scene where it gets announced to the staff that they got the 2 stars and everyone celebrates. And then Joel McHale's character happens to walk through the door and say to Carmi, "You're welcome." And Carmi throws a bottle at his head. I'd like to see that.
Sadly, I don't think we'll ever get that moment.
I don't think that's coming our way. No, but again, it was a tremendous series. And again, I was happy to see that it wrapped up in a way that I felt like did justice to it. And I think if you are a great fan of any kind of a franchise, I think more or less that's the standard you're applying to it, is the way that they wrapped it up, did it do justice to the way that the show lived and the lifespan of it and whatever? In its final moments, did it do justice to it? And it's very disappointing when a show doesn't do that. But I certainly felt like the Bear did. I know that you did. And I know that that is largely, perhaps even overwhelmingly, what the public feels as well.
Yeah, and I feel like they did a very good job at the tail end of the season in trying to push forward these characters and providing, you know, much-needed closure for a handful of them.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. That how you bring the closure to a show like this, obviously, is very important. And again, they did that. They hit every note, as it were. And so in a show where, and I'm already kind of looking ahead to the end of the year here of doing a review of some of the, and a ranking of some of the best shows of 2026, this will easily make my top 5 for the year. I am finding that relative to 2025, where I had not just the top 5, but a very, very lengthy list of honorable mention, I'm finding that the field is a lot thinner in the year 2026. But it's possible that this show might have, you know, ranked had it been a year earlier, possibly even in 2025, which is a year where I think we may look back on as one of the bigger years for TV seasons in recent history.
And I mean, it makes sense. And I also know, too, that we still have a handful of other things that's coming down the pipeline for 2026. So we will see what ends up happening in terms of, because we always know this too, Rick, once we hit fall and winter, there's always one or two shows that always comes back, or something that comes out of total left field that becomes insanely popular.
That's right. That's right. And The Bear even initially was a bit of a surprise hit the way that it ended up going. I don't know that the creators of it had any kind of idea that it was going to blow up to the degree that it did and to become, you know, kind of a, I mean, I would put, you know, not all capital letters cultural phenomenon, but maybe all lowercase letters cultural phenomenon. It is something that really became an important show to a lot of people and something that you and I really enjoyed a lot over the last couple of years. So nice to see them stick the landing on this, and hopefully that's the case for some of the other shows that we love in the next couple of years to come. But always great to have you on, whether it be talking hoops, talking the streaming industry, talking anything else, and talking TV as we were here today. Ben Chu, thank you so much for being here today, my man.
I appreciate it, Rick. Every second counts.
Thanks, pal. Every second counts. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode 1940.